This is Katie and Kay, and you are listening to Everything Under the Sun, our weekly half-hour talk show with the Sober Sun. I'm Will Grandbois, editor of the Sun, and with me in the studio is Gavin Dahl, the head honcho here at Katie and Kay.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
Sure thing. So we're going to talk about movies today. Keep it a little bit light, although there's some other stuff to talk in there that isn't so light. And before we get into that, we're going to tell you why you ought to listen to Gavin on movies, because this man has seen more films than probably the whole Sober Sun staff combined, I'm going to bet.
I have a column out in the new issue today called Obsessed with Cinema, and you can read a summary in print and the entire thing on the website if you haven't seen the new Sober Sun website. It's looking great. Great job, Will, and
thanks.
Your whole team. Also, great cover photo on the issue this week.
Oh, yeah. I had the pleasure of getting to hand that to Matt personally today. He's all shaved up because... I don't know if you guys have seen that cover, but it's he agreed to be duct taped to a wall out of three options, and once that he was duct taped, they just kind of took him up on the other options since he was unable to resist. So it was a fun one.
That's the Roaring Fork High School principal.
Yes. Christopher River Elementary School.
Sorry, elementary school principal.
Yes. Yeah.
Great cover. Okay, so the reason that we're talking movies today is the Oscars are on Sunday, and we are doing one last look back at the best films of 2017. Mm-hmm. And in terms of my obsession, what happens for me is I track every single release that comes out theatrically in the United States each year. I use a website called Metacritic. A lot of people are familiar with Rotten Tomatoes. It's very similar, kind of collects and aggregates the reviews from critics around the country and the world. And over 700 movies screened in New York or L.A., or both, in 2017, and I watched 150 of them. I know it's embarrassing to some of my friends. noted about another 250 that I thought looked promising. So I had a giant master list of all the films that I wanted to see.
I've seen this list. It's, yeah. It's phenomenal.
And then at least over 300 that I intended to skip. And for example, for me, if you're a big horror movie fan, I'm really not your critic. It's not one of the areas that I'm particularly interested in. Of course, I respect production design and directing and editing and acting and all the other things that go into horror film. But I think Get Out is probably the only somewhat horror film I even saw in 2017. So that's an example of an area that I'm just not that interested in. But for example, I do actually really enjoy kids' movies. So we can talk animation today, you know. So that's kind of where it started for me. And I got my start working in movie theaters in Austin, Texas as a teenager. I used to work at a great little theater called The Arbor, where some of the people that I popped popcorn for as a teenager included Richard Linklater and Natalie Portman. And, the Austin music scene really at its peak in that time, with a lot of activity from Mike Judge and Robert Rodriguez, and Tarantino was doing stuff in Austin at the time. And so that was kind of my early roots, going to film festivals and becoming a playwright and a filmmaker myself. And then as I kind of continued growing my skill set, I became a 35 millimeter film projectionist. And so I'm one of those geeks with the, you know, with the film reels and threading the projector up. And there were years, Will, where I would be at the movies and the film would be out of focus, or they would have used the wrong aperture plate, or different projection problems. And I literally, this is before the tragic, theater shootings and stuff. I literally would go back into the projection booth and just fix the movie myself. And now, though, the stores are usually locked.
Yeah,
and
that's probably a good thing.
And it's almost all digital now, of course. Mm-hmm. The Crystal, an example of a theater that was able to fundraise and do that conversion, So really important for the survival of local theaters. But that was a big thing for me. Moving from Denver to the Valley about 2 years ago, I was convinced that, my access to new cinema is going to be lousy. And instead, I've been so thrilled. And I mean, I have to give credit to the Bowtie too, because they, of course, book films that we don't get otherwise. But between the Crystal and the Isis and Aspen, I've just had really good luck. I also, in case folks in this listening to this haven't tried it, the library system has an incredible interlibrary loan. I mean, it's not just what's in Garfield County's libraries. It's all over Colorado, from the Front Range, up and down the West Slope. And so I've been able to see, for example, a lot of documentaries that wouldn't get a theatrical release in this country, or at least not in this area, but that do end up in the library system. So
great. So I can't keep up with that. I'm a small town boy, and but I work at the Crystal Theater on Sundays, and have threaded up a film projector. I learned before we did the the transition to digital. So I've had a chance to get my hands right on the film there. And so that means I see, you know, sort of just by default by my job, 30 or 40 films a year. Mm-hmm. And often I make it up to Movie Land a few more times past that. Honestly, when I do a rental, it's rarely a current film, mm-hmm. Which is how you end up with, you know, maybe... Gavin doesn't look back much, so maybe at least on the classic movies we could start dueling and I might be on firm ground. We did have our classic movie night this last week for the Soper Sun. Have you seen Some Like It Hot, Gavin?
Classic film.
Yeah. Had you seen that one?
Yeah, but I haven't seen it since I was, I mean, years ago, growing up. So. But it's a quintessential piece of U.S. cinema history.
Absolutely. Sort of helped with the Hays Code or getting rid of the Hays Code. And everybody who came seemed to enjoy it. I didn't see anybody, you know, frowning or grumpy leaving that theater. So that's good news. So, and of course, this is a call-in show. So if there's somebody out there who wants to help me offset Gavin's vast knowledge or has a different experience, like obviously we're two white guys talking here. So there's definitely some diversity of opinion out there that could be welcome. Give us a call, 963-2976. We'll be happy to pipe you into the conversation. But in the meantime, without further ado, Gavin, what are by the way, guys, it's Oscar season. Oscars are happening this weekend, so that's why we chose this particular moment, in addition to it being classic movie night, to have this talk. What are our best picture options? What's out there?
So this year, 9 films are nominated for Best Picture for the Academy Awards, and just going alphabetically here, you have Call Me By Your Name, you have Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. So a real diverse set of films. Mm-hmm. Real exciting to see a few kind of, I guess one really main action film, which is Dunkirk. But just a real interesting set of stuff. I mean, you've got historical things. You have sort of this experiment into horror comedy with Get Out and... I saw 7 of them. I think you said you saw 7.
We both saw 7, yeah. We got a caller in, so let's let them in real quick, and then we'll get a little deeper into this. Katie and Kay, you're on the air.
Hi there, guys.
Hey, movies. Amy.
Hey! Yay, movies. Got a lot of good movies up for best movie this year.
Yeah, it seems like it.
So, Amy, do you of the nominees, now we're not yet going off onto other films that weren't nominated, mm-hmm. but of these 9 nominees, Amy, do you have a favorite?
Well, I have 2 favorites. I have Darkest Hour and 3 Billboards.
So Gary Oldman plays Winston Churchill in Darkest Hour. Now, I didn't see this film. I blew it. I missed it at the Crystal. You guys both saw it. Some said, you know, some of the critics said that he was amazing, but the film was so-so. What do you guys make of that assessment?
Yeah, I would say that. However, I think, I compare it to Lincoln. Now, obviously, it's a different time period, but, you know, the Lincoln that Daniel Day-Lewis won the award for. To me, that film focused on all of the politics and what was going on with that time period, and that's kind of what was going on with Darkest Hour, to me. It was focusing on the politics. It was focusing on what Churchill himself was doing and the difficulties that he was having it wasn't like Dunkirk. I mean, it was the same time period. It was Dunkirk. And Dunkirk was focusing on what was happening on the beach, and Darkest Hour was focusing on what was happening in politics.
In London,
office.
Right.
Yeah.
But I thought the costuming and the script and... the acting was marvelous. The only thing I didn't like about it was Kristen Scott Thomas in the role of his wife. She deserves a bigger sort of canvas.
She's a great actor. I'd love to see her do more. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I kind of agree with Amy. And I also kind of agree. That's Amy Haddon Marsh, by the way. I don't know if we actually introduced her on the
they know her.
Katie and K Zone, but just making sure in case you're new to town and tuning in. I do think that the performance was really at the crux of of what made that a great film. Mm-hmm. And I think I would not be surprised to see the best actor go to Gary, even if you know, the film itself doesn't. You know, the biggest critique I've seen of both Dunkirk and Darkest Hour is kind of glossing over some of the darker aspects of the British side of things during World War II, not quite to the point of being a revisionist in terms of history, but certainly looking back through a nostalgic lens at a period of history that that saw some real problems around for everybody. You know, and Churchill, by all accounts, was kind of a even more difficult to get along with than the film portrays. So,
right, and that's when you got to go watch The Crown season one.
Yeah, well, definitely more on some of the best TV shows maybe in a future conversation. And yeah, I've heard the same thing. You know, to me, I think Chris Nolan, the director of Dunkirk, should win Best Director. I think
that's
all
an exceptional movie.
All five films nominated in the Best Director category, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, and Shape of Water, are in the Best Picture category. So it's okay, I think, for us to jump onto that too. I just think Dunkirk, as a piece of craftsmanship, and particularly with some of the footage in the plains, and obviously the stuff on the ocean, I just thought that in terms of the direction, I thought Dunkirk was the strongest film. But
well,
it sounds
Christopher
like
Nolan has won. He won Best Film for Inception years ago. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that his film?
It was, yeah. And yeah. So, but Will, you didn't love Dunkirk as much.
You know, as far if the question is who's the best director, I have no problem giving that to Nolan. I think his treatment of Dunkirk was spectacular. Mm-hmm. It's engrossing all the way through with relatively little dialogue. It's visually arresting.
Tom Hardy, the acting was superb.
It all comes together. I guess I'm a bit of a sucker for entertainment and not just drama. And
yep.
I think
right.
the film that set that balance really kind of kept me engrossed all the way through, kept me laughing, made me think it has to be Three Billboards. Of those choices.
Yes, Three Billboards was fabulous. I kept wondering why I was laughing, but I was laughing.
It was a wonderful black comedy.
And I think Sam Rockwell had a really, really difficult job because, I mean, I think most of America hates the character who he played.
Plays these skanky kind of characters.
God, it was incredible.
Is he up for an award?
He is, yeah.
Oh, he was fabulous.
He and Woody Harrelson are both in the actor in a supporting role category for their performances. And I like Woody, but I think Sam Rockwell,
head and
shoulders, deserves that between the two of them.
And his mother.
But so what would you guys say is your best picture of the year? Is it on this list of these top nine? Because mine is.
You know, but I'm going to hold mine for a little later discussion because it leads into some other conversations we've got to have. I do think that the list is solidly represented. I think all of the picks in there that I've seen are worthy of consideration. Shape of Water and Phantom Thread almost offset each other a little bit in that they both took this sort of romance with a creepy, strange undertone thing, and either of them on their own might have been a bigger contender. But I'm having trouble choosing between the two. Similarly, Dunkirk and Darkest Hour maybe offset each other. So I think Three Billboards is a really strong candidate, maybe stronger than my favorite film of the year for some reasons.
What was yours?
I'm happy. Well, we'll get there, Amy. But
how about you, Amy? So what's your number one?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I really like Three Billboards. And I liked, and I know that this movie's up for some awards, and I know it's kind of a controversial, but I loved Blade Runner 2049. I don't know if it's my favorite of the year, but I really enjoyed seeing it. It's a must-see on the large screen, on the big screen.
And it has five nominations: visual effects, sound mixing, sound editing, production design, which clearly had an incredible production design, and then cinematography, which you can't really argue. I don't know if it deserves to win all those necessarily, but it certainly merits nomination in all five categories.
I do too. I liked it. I don't know if it's what I think is the best movie of the year. It's hard for me to think. I usually make a list of all the movies that I see because the library is my Netflix. But I kind of gave that up after a while. I couldn't keep track. So I don't know. Three Billboards I really liked. I was surprised that I liked it as much as I did. Okay. And I haven't seen all of the ones that are up for awards yet.
Well, so Shape of Water is my favorite film of the year, and I was just completely blown away by it. There is some scandal associated with Shape of Water. If you guys heard about this, there's some debate if there's a playwright who wrote a play who passed away, whose family claims that the ideas in Shape of Water are derivative of this original work. So that actually is going to be interesting to see if that has an effect on Shape of Water's performance in the Academy. But anyway, I just loved the film, and I think Sally Hawkins should get Best Actress.
Really?
And I love Guillermo del Toro, everything he does, even his blockbuster films. But I thought this was just a wonderful mix of that sort of throwback, time period piece to the Cold War.
When does it take place?
It's really Cold War era, it's a very brazen takedown of the kind of American idealistic, exceptionalism. But to me, it worked. I totally worked. And then I loved the sort of esoteric nature of this. I don't want to really spoil the film for people who haven't seen it.
No, especially it's currently at the Crystal. So you're getting this.
Is tonight the last night?
It might be.
I think tonight at 7:30. Tonight at 7:30 might be the very final show of Shape of Water. So
keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
You did not hear it from the Crystal Theater employee. You heard it from the independent
store. Oh, it looks like Sunday 4 p.m. is it. And then that's it. It's done.
Okay, Sunday at 4.
Tonight at 7:30 and Sunday at 4, the last chances that we know of to see Shape of Water at the Crystal. So.
All right, there you go.
I should probably hang up.
Okay.
I'd love to stay on for the whole half hour, but there might be somebody else who wants
to
call.
Well, if nobody calls in, call right back in, Amy.
All right. Thanks, good
if
show.
If you are waiting on the line, the number is, again, 963-2976. And I want to take advantage of Amy bringing up Blade Runner 2049, because that was one that really was close to my heart. As a big fan of the original Blade Runner, well, not the original Blade Runner, the later edit of Blade Runner, as opposed to the original theatrical version, but it was one of those examples of a film that hit on so many levels and missed on enough that I just couldn't make it my favorite film of the year. Visually spectacular, great acting, great sound design. It seems to me to be a shoe-in for some of those things like cinematography and the technical awards. Although I think there's maybe a better sound design option out there we'll get to. Just needed an edit. It's almost another one of those, just like the first one, somebody needs to do a cut of it that trims a little bit of the fat and keeps it running a little faster. Because 2.5 hours, even when you're visually arrested, it starts to drain on you. It feels like it's not getting anywhere. That was my only critique of it. Otherwise, spectacular film. Would watch it on silent and be completely happy, just basking in the glory.
If you don't mind, Will, I want to rattle off a few more of my picks for Best Picture that didn't make the nominees.
Okay.
Just a quick minute. So one of the films that I think people really need to check out is called Mudbound, and this was a Netflix production, and it's about two World War II vets coming home to the Jim Crow South and their unlikely friendship, and it's a tough one to watch, but it's really good. I also loved The Midwife, which is a French film, really kind of looking at forgiveness another example of a film that you as a viewer are so angry at a certain character, and then as the film progresses, you start to question your own implication in anger and will that do any good, and I love that. I love when a film challenges your own assumptions, not unlike what happens with Sam Rockwell's character in Three Billboards. I'll leave it at that. But another couple films I think people should really watch out for: Salma Hayek and John Lithgow in Beatrice at Dinner, fantastic. And then some kind of coming of age films that I loved, one called Princess Cyd, CYD, Lady Bird, which is very well recognized by writer director Greta Gerwig, and then Patty Cakes, which was a little indie film about a white female hip-hop artist, and really good. Richard Linklater's new film was completely ignored by critics this year. It's called Last Flag Flying, and it's about Vietnam veterans brought back together by another misguided war. I mean, just a really powerful film, I thought. And then I actually thought Jessica Chastain and Idris Elba in Molly's Game were just fabulous. They just chewed up the screen with great dialogue from Aaron Sorkin. So, those are all real powerful. We talked about Get Out, which I know you haven't seen yet, Will. It's fantastic. It's really, really interesting. It's fun. It's clear why it was so popular. And The Florida Project was fantastic. And then one last thing I want to mention is the film Wind River, which is really trying to force the issue of the unsolved disappearance of many, many Native women in this country. Mm-hmm. And it's a scary one in one way, because it was a Weinstein film, and then the filmmakers fought to have Weinstein's name taken off the film, because of course, with the all of the widespread scandals around Harvey Weinstein, to have his name tied to a film that's specifically around trying to fight for justice for women abused was just a real mess. But it's a really powerful film. It's definitely worth watching, despite that original Weinstein attachment.
So, and I'd love to. We have another caller in. Maybe it's Amy again. Katie and Kay, you're on the air.
It's Amy again.
Hey, Amy.
Wind River is really good. It's really scary.
That's
very good.
That's good to know. I have not seen it, and I'll put it on my own list. Mm-hmm. And we'll get to the Weinstein thing in a second. First, I'm just going to let everybody know, this is Katie and Kay Carbondale, Community Access Radio, Glen Springs Carbondale.
I need to turn my radio down.
The Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Support for Katie and Kay comes from the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority. Online bus schedules and route at myrfta.com. The MyRafta bus tracker gives real-time information for all routes throughout the valley. Info, again, myrfta.com. Underwriting on Katie and Kay is an effective way to market your business, reach your friends and neighbors in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond with Katie and Kay's reasonable underwriting packages. And support also comes from Harmony Scott Jewelry Design, offering a local shopping experience in downtown Carbondale. Handmade limited edition jewelry, voted local's favorite since 2001. Gifts for everyone from the town you love. Gallery at 199 Main Street or online at harmonyscott.com. This is, we're getting toward the end of our Everything Under the Sun hour here at, our half hour at Katie and Kay with me, Will Grandbois, editor of the Soper Sun, Gavin Dahl here in the studio, and Amy Haddon-Marsh on the line. I guess I might as well. We're talking movies here, and I'll list a couple of my favorites. Really liked Thor Ragnarok. I was surprised. I'm not a big superhero movie fan.
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, big surprise.
Like about that?
Well, it was the same. It turned out it's the same director as one of my favorite films of recent years, which was Hunt for the Wilder People.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got,
that was great.
Well, if you liked Hunt for the Wilder People, there's a chance you'll like Thor Ragnarok. It's got
lot
of the same humor, similar pacing. I was very pleasantly surprised.
Oh, okay.
Haven't seen Black Panther yet, so. We're not going to get into that one.
2018 heard, films. We'll talk about that
later. We'll talk that later. You know, I was, while we're on the subject of historical British films, their finest, actually a pretty fun one.
A
little bit lighter than its competitors.
Oh, right.
It was good.
But,
that's Bill Nye, right?
Yeah, love him.
Love that guy.
Entertaining all the way through, and kind of pokes fun almost at its competitors in being a film about making a propaganda film.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then The Beguiled, you know, remake of that. Haven't seen the original.
The original is really good.
Going on in there. That's a little odd, but really kind of a good mind messer. Also introduces the weird thread of mushrooms as a theme. If you watched several movies, and then Baby Driver, which is the one that really as an all around film. Did it for me, and there's a reason it's not on Gavin's top 100, and I guess he's going to tell me about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I saw the film, I enjoyed it, and I thought that Kevin Spacey's character's dynamic was kind of strange, and then we'd heard rumors of Kevin Spacey's bad behavior over the years, but then the Spacey scandals hit pretty heavily, and it really changes the film. I can't imagine watching that film now for the first time. Knowing what we know about Kevin Spacey versus
before. Well, speaking of
before.
Kevin Spacey, I just remembered the other movie that I saw that I really liked was All the Money in the World.
Sure, yeah.
I really liked it because I love Christopher Plummer, and knowing the background of that film and all of the stuff that happened, and he just sort of helicoptered in, you know, he was wonderful.
Yeah, if
it was
you're
really a good movie.
If you're reading, if you're listening in, and you're wondering, wait, I didn't remember Kevin Spacey and All the Money in the World. That's because they cut him out in about 2 weeks,
right.
and replaced him with Christopher Plummer, mm-hmm.
Who's now Oscar nominated for his late addition to the film.
Although it then had this after they got out of that, then they ended up in the situation where one actor had been paid a great deal more for the reshoots than the other. So
then Michelle Williams,
yeah.
But Colin, what's his face, Farrell. It wasn't Colin, it was Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
Had gotten paid more than
We only have 2 minutes left. I got to squeeze in a couple more picks for people. Coco is about to come out on DVD. I loved it. My Life as a Zucchini, The Aspirations of an Orphan with stop motion animation. Just amazing. The Red Turtle, a new Studio Ghibli film about a shipwrecked man on a tropical island. Loving Vincent, over 60,000 frames of film, hand-painted in Van Gogh's style. And The Breadwinner, about a young girl in Kabul who has to disguise herself as a boy to feed her family under the Taliban. All of these just incredible animated films. And then for best comedy, we got to laugh, guys. The Big Sick was great. I loved Logan Lucky, the new Soderbergh film. He's back. And then Landline was really funny. It's about two sisters who are trying to bust their philandering father without their mom finding out. So anyway, the list goes on and on. You can read all of my picks at soprasun.com.
Yes, you can. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention The Post. We had Spotlight. We've done the movies about newspapers. But if you're interested in journalism, if you're turning into this show expecting more of that, which we'll give you in the long run, The Post is kind of a must watch, and is hoping to come to the Crystal at some point if you missed it before.
I think it looks like next Friday. Oh, it looks like a week
really?
From Friday.
I don't know. I'm a little tired of Tom Hanks.
Hey, give it a chance. The thing is, this movie really is centered around the role that Katharine Graham played as Washington Post publisher in getting those Pentagon Papers out while the New York Times was under an injunction. And it's a really, really great way to know more about that story with great performances.
So it's pretty accurate.
I mean, I thought it was great. I thought it was great.
I enjoyed it. I went to the Academy screening thanks to Aspen Journalism. They got me a ticket.
So where are you going to watch the Oscars this weekend? I'm going to be at the Alamo Drafthouse in Denver with a bunch of film fanatics. It's going to be so fun.
I don't know. Will it stream online?
Nope.
It's just TV? I have no idea.
I'm kind of hoping to go to Moab this weekend. So if I'm in a motel room, I might catch it. Otherwise, I'll see see stuff after the fact.
Thanks for calling in, Amy.
All right. Thanks you guys.
Amy. Have a good one. Oh, sorry, I cut her off there. Gavin, thanks for joining me. And this is the end of Everything Under the Sun.